Welcome, everybody, to Fox Sports Radio, 1340 AM and Fox Sports Radio 96.9 FM. The soul in sports? No. Around the blocks with Mike Knox? Yes. But I am joined by the one, the only, our NBA aficionado, Mr. Champ Creed. What's going on, Champ?
Money Mike. What's good, my brother?
Everything is great. Life is good. Another week is here before us. Last dance. The last dance. Let's dance. It's not in March, but it's here in April. And we're talking about, to me anyway, the greatest documentary of all time. Now, we just got a chance to witness episodes 3 and 4, which are really close and dear to my heart, to be completely honest with you, because as a lifelong Chicagoan, I just thought off like to just go right to the situation. Right to the point, yeah. Champ.
Let's do it.
Horace Grant said, and I quote, "They were a bunch of bitches." The biggest misnomer for me to come out of this part three and four, Scott, if you will, so to speak, Champ, is the world acting as if they didn't know that Isaiah and them walked off the court. It had that in it this week. So we're going to talk about the Isaiah Thomas situation. Should he have been in the dream team? Should he not been in the dream team? Them actually walking off the court, was it unsportsmanlike? And also, we got to talk about the Zen Master. And we're going to start here, start right now, with the most controversial NBA superstar of all time, and Mr. Dennis Rodman, Champ. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I mean, you got so many topics that we can go down, but let's take them all one by one, shot by shot, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're the jump shooter, right?
All right.
In slow motion. I don't take too many jump shots. I bang them down low. Okay, but let's start off with Dennis Rodman. And one of the things that he said that opened up this documentary, and it was, yeah, you got the great Michael Jordan. You got the great Scottie Pippen. You got the great Phil Jackson. But would you be able to do any of this without me? I don't think so. And it made me pause and think, and I had to say, you know what? He is absolutely right, Champ.
Yeah, you know what? Dennis Rodman was a key component to that second set of championships, the second three-peat, just because, you know, they highlighted when Pippen was out, Rodman had to fill in the blanks. He did everything with the exception of scoring. Mm-hmm. And for a guy like Dennis Rodman to have him on your team before pretty much he kind of like fizzled out, like these were his last great years or good years, I really think that the addition of him with the loss of Horace Grant, who went to Orlando, mm-hmm. pretty much cemented the fact that this second team, in my belief, these I think were his that last second set great of Bulls championships, that team is better than the first three.
Okay.
You know, with the exception of the moving parts where, you know, you got B.J. Armstrong mm-hmm. versus Randy Brown, right. John Paxson versus right. Steve Kerr. There was just a certain level of mastery that this Bulls team had, you know, 96, 97, 98, that, you know, with Rodman as a part of that team, just took him to the next level. So he was just as equally as vital as Pippen and as Jordan, of course.
I absolutely agree with you 100% in that, and even saying all that. And looking back, looking at that, like you said, moving into inner parts of the show and seeing what those guys did, you're right. Without Rodman, you lost Horace Grant. You lost Bill Cartwright. You didn't have that guy, that Charles Oakley, if you will, so to speak, and Horace Grant even kind of, in a sense, picked up for them that Dennis Rodman did do. But having him being there, having being an important part, because he was an important part to the Detroit Bad Boy Pistons, he was, in some words, looking at to be a big part to San Antonio before he got traded to Chicago. Mm-hmm. To me, the greatest rebounder in NBA history. Not a 7-footer. And I love how he spoke about how he taught himself and he practiced. And I love watching this documentary about my children, because I love how many times these guys talk about, yes, the infamous practice. We're talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game that I live and die for, but practice, because practice does make you better. Speak on that one, Champ.
Well, I mean, you know, when he spoke about being able to understand the trajectory of where the ball was going to go, mm-hmm. you know, but just understanding his teammates, you can't put an emphasis. You can't put much more emphasis on it for the simple fact that that is timing. That's geometry. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's just a knack and a skill and an instinct that this guy had that not a lot of players. I mean, who could we even compare from a rebounding standpoint that has done the things that he's done that wasn't a big man?
Right.
You know, this guy's 6'8", 230, 235. But the other addition to that team that really isn't highlighted, and I'm assuming it'll be highlighted in future episodes, is the addition of Tony Kukoc.
Okay, right. No,
Tony Kukoc added another layer of scoring and playmaking. And he would just, from an offensive standpoint, you know, he's a 6'11 guy with handle. So who are you going to put on him back in that day? You know what I'm saying? Versus right. now where they got the stretch fours and stretch fives that have a little bit of, you know, athleticism more so than they did back then. Tony Kukoc was a problem. Absolutely. And he added another layer offensively to that team. Like that team is like really legit. How do you stop them?
Right.
You know, there's no, how do you stop them?
There, to me, there was no way to stop that team. But it wasn't because I thought they were a super team champ. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that these guys were a great, you know, like we could say the super teams were today, where Golden State had five. San Antonio and them had four and five and a great, great bench. I just really think that this Bulls team was pretty driven by Scotty, Michael.
Yep.
Offensively, there was nothing else offensively. And people could say, well, oh, you know, and we talk about later when it comes to Phil Jackson finally getting Michael, the influence he had over Michael and getting the ball out of his hands finally and Paxton hitting shots. Guys, forget, you're in the NBA. It's your job to hit open shots. It ain't like, oh, you know, oh, he didn't have that guy make that shot that he wouldn't have made it. I don't want to hear that, you know, that guy passed to that guy. That's his job, okay? And it's my job to either score the ball the best way or get you the ball in the best way for you to score the ball. And I thought Michael did that. So with that team, that final three-peat, it was just those three guys with some great defense that they don't talk about, and I hope they talk about, and they brought them up, and the shot, not the block, because that doesn't matter right now. We're not talking about LeBron. I'm talking about the shot that Mike hit, and that's Ron Harper.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ron, damn, see, we even forgot about Ron Harper. I mean, at one point in his career, Ron Harper averaged about like 20 points a game. He was a prolific scorer for the LA Clippers. And then he was also a more than respectable defender on the other end of the floor. So, you know, this documentary is just bringing back so many things that I forgot. And for those that weren't around, it's bringing up things that they didn't know. You spoke about, like, Dennis. I'm starting to think. Remember when Jordan retired the first time?
Mm-hmm.
And it was Scotty, Horace, Tony, BJ.
Mm-hmm.
That team actually, give or take that bad call by Hugh Holland.
Let's not do that because that was the four-peat. People don't know that. Yeah.
That team could have won it too.
That team should have won it if not for that.
Yeah.
Wasn't that called the call that for the referee, I'm sorry, that went to jail? Wasn't that one of his games,
no.
If I'm not mistaken?
No.
That wasn't
him. No, that wasn't him. That was Hugh Hollins.
Okay. Horrible. Yeah,
that was Hugh. Horrible good old
call.
Hugh Hollins. Foul Hubert Davis. And you know,
He didn't foul him.
I really, well, the phantom foul.
Yeah, so you're a Knicks fan. You know he ain't foul him. Tell the truth.
Yeah, but
tell the truth.
No, I'm gonna be honest with you. I tell the truth. That was not a foul. It wasn't a foul.
Okay.
I really, at that point in time, I have figured this out, right? That David Stern liked to have either a big market and another big market in the finals,
mm-hmm.
a big market and a mid market in the finals. David Stern did not like to have small market versus small market.
Right.
And then also the marketability of that team, that franchise, of that market. I think that if that Bulls team went to the finals against Houston,
yeah,
and had they defeated the Houston Rockets,
mm-hmm.
that would have changed the entire trajectory of Scottie Pippen's legacy
yeah.
because then
he won
everyone
Mike.
Would have said – one, he won it without Mike. And then two, who was the most important Chicago Bull during these championships?
Okay.
Because you got to figure, when Mike came back the next year, they lost.
Yeah.
So could you imagine the media headlines if the Bulls won that fourth title in a row?
Mike comes
and
back.
And then Michael Jordan comes back and then they lose it?
Yeah.
It wouldn't, come on
it, now. And then we wouldn't have what we have today also. We already get the Mike couldn't, you know, what's the line by Foxy Brown? You're only nice around Mike's like Pippen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
oh,
so,
wow.
So for Mike to be able to, you know, we don't want to have that. Because I already now, and trying to enjoy this documentary, champ, is the annoyance of the comparisons yet again between him and the King. And I don't even want to go there even today, if you will, just enjoy this. And yeah. I'm glad that didn't happen, because that would have been even a bigger thing. And it's always that cog, if you will, that spacely cog that someone tries to implement that messes up what the masses is referring to. And referring to, and getting back to this documentary, referring to Dennis Rodman and his antics, and we calling him the most outrageous and NBA star of all time, and some things that had to come out. Now, I kind of knew about Dennis taking the leave of absence, didn't know why. Let's just put it like that, right? And I don't even think that's a big deal. I think what was a big deal was, A, Phil having to call Mike in there to help him, because Phil wasn't going to let him go without Mike knowing.
Wait, no. Remember, Mike volunteered to go get him.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about that part now, but even before he even went on his 48-hour, or at this point, 87-hour sabbatical, Phil had to ask Mike, like, hey, Dennis want a vacation. And he's like, you know, that whole thing, like, he need a vacation, I need a vacation. You know what I mean? But him leaving, Dennis, Michael voluntarily going to pick him up, that's a lot of things right there. A, Dennis Rodman had a lot of fine women, okay? Carmen Electra, talking about she didn't even open up the door. Because she saw Mike after she wanted Mike to see her like that. I thought that was great. It's such how the lifestyle that Dennis Rodman led. That if could you imagine today him leaving and LeBron has to go pick up Chris Bosh from the hotel?
Twitter would have a fit.
It would be insane. It had been insane. And the fact that he comes back, they don't have a single other problem out of him the rest of the year. And, you know, the rest is history. I personally think Dennis Rodman should always be remembered and should be remembered. Unfortunately, like he said, he's a product of what he created. You know what I mean? He will be remembered for a lot of the antics, but yep, a great basketball player, nevertheless, and a very important glue to that dynasty three-peat at the end of this.
And the thing about it is, what you also have to take into account, Phil, like the way he handled him, you know, the mastery of coaching, the ability to understand what each individual needs to be better off contributing to the collective, to allow him to do that. No other coach in the NBA at that time would have allowed for anything like that.
Nothing even close.
But he understood the psychology of a guy like Dennis. And then when it was time for him to come back, he came back. Now, just switching gears, you also know that Carmen Electra was in there. But Mike said he also saw some other things in the bed with him, too.
Yeah. He mentioned that.
So Dennis was prolific, catching things off the glass on the court. Also in those dark corners of the hotel rooms, man. But
that getting Mike dry snitching? Because they said, you know, he snitched Mike on his rookie team.
Mike has been snitching on this thing. He snitched on Scotty Burrell.
Yeah.
He snitched on Dennis.
He's going to snitch on Horace when we see the next episode. But Horace legitimately came out and said he didn't tell anybody anything. Talking about Sam Smith, the longtime Chicago Bulls beat writer.
Yeah, Mike is letting it rip, man. Yeah. So if you watching this with your fam, don't watch it with your family, man.
Oh, I have.
Just tell them don't watch it.
I have.
No, not you. The players on the Bulls.
Players on the Bulls team. No, not for those times. Not for them times.
They don't need to watch.
But let's also move on as the big news of the night, you know, getting Dennis Rodman, being a former bad boy, if you will. I remember him coming over saying, y'all do know he's a Piston, right? Can we trust this guy? And me at that time, going back to that day, going back to, we talked about last year. Probably did talk about it last year, though. But Mike, the scenario that, you know, everybody has to go through somebody to become that guy. So the Pistons for the Bulls were that team. I still hate Detroit to this day because of the bad boy Pistons. Okay? Respect Isaiah. Respect the players. I will always say things like this where I may hate a team, but I respect players. Again, I go back to wrestling terminology. I will always love CM Punk. But the man Phil Brooks can eat my, you know, forget you, dog, because you gave me one thing in your mouth and you quit in the company. But I respect, but also as a man, I wish I could tell my company, he'd go to Stone Cold Steve Austin and move on and live. I respect that. So him coming here and seeing and having us hate these guys, hate these guys, hate these guys, and them constantly, constantly, you can look there up on the screen, constantly whooping Mike's ass, okay? Whooping Scotty's ass. Whooping Horace Mann's ass.
Literally
whooping their ass, which they didn't talk about, but I wanted to talk about the most, which is that migraine game. They dabbled in it, and that was all. And I think Mike gave a lot of respect to Scotty for not going into what unofficially, officially, off the record, how Mike berated him in the hallways and cussed him out for that headache. That was not documentary.
Let me say, there's a couple things with that. One, in terms of knowing now what we didn't know then, from a medical standpoint, I'm pretty sure the Pistons gave Scotty a concussion. Because between Mahorn, yeah. Lambeer, yeah. Rodman, and Buddha Edwards beating on you for the whole series, I'm sure he had a concussion at some point in time. You know, and those weren't light taps, and he didn't fall soft.
No.
Right? And second of all, I do believe around that time, like, someone in Scotty's family had passed away. So you combine the grief with the successive blows to the head, plus everything else that was going on, because he had some personal problems at home as well. You know, I think real life took precedence over what was going on. Real life and health issues. Well, see, you know, so I can't knock him for that.
Again, looking back, hindsight is 20/20. We do know that. I'm speaking again, an inside from a Chicago kid that knows how Mike. It's historically known that Michael Jordan cussed him out for having not playing in that game seven. That's not in the documentary is what I'm going to point out. It's going to be one of them things forever for Philadelphia Eagle fans to make it more current. Did Donovan McNabb throw up on the football field, or he didn't throw up on the football field? Depending on which one of his teammates you ask, right? Yeah, he did throw up. No, he didn't. I didn't see anything. You know what I mean? But if you watch the game, the huddle didn't move. So something was going on with that pickle juice. But, you know, that being said, still, how important this was, the ass-whooping in which this team got, when they finally got over the hump and they finally beat them, and this happened, champ.
I feel that he'll be back unless some circumstances come up in those 2 weeks that Chuck says, you know, I don't think I can do anything else in Detroit. I need to do something else. And Chuck is now clearing the bench. And all we have to do is listen to the crowd. Very emotional scene.
Yeah. Isaiah walking off the court like that, Lambeer getting off the court. Look at these fans clapping for their former team.
How did you feel? To hug both of his teammates.
How did you feel when the Pistons... when the Celtics
that's the thing that people want to come to a close.
It happened the other way around. Okay, here's the thing.
I'm saying that to say this. Right? Was it poor sportsmanship? Yes. Would I have done it? No. But do I think that history looks back more unkindly to the Pistons as they do to the Celtics? Yes. And I think you should call out, if you're going to call out the Pistons for doing it, you should also call out the Celtics for doing it.
This is where I a little different. Let's move Vinny Johnson, John Sally, and Joe Dumars away from the Pistons, because those are the three guys that did go shake the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan in them hands. The difference in the two was, and the Celtics thing is that no one went and met each other. Only Isaiah.
Mikal.
Okay, went and did something. It's how this story was told. Told to the world now that what we knew, he told them to let's leave. Now, it's being said later. He said, oh, let's pay respect. Nah. In that moment, I'm quite sure Bill Lambeer didn't say, hey, let's do to them what they did to us. And this is a sign of respect. No, that was Bill Lambeer being Bill Lambeer, being the toughest white boy probably any of us ever seen in the NBA, okay? And say, hey, we ain't giving them no respect. Let's go. And that's why I think Sally, who said, I can't do that, and he's a frat brother of mine, Joe Dumars, who to me is one of the greatest illustrations of all time. I found this picture, champ. I had to bring it up on the show today because you have certain Sports Illustrated magazines that will always stick out to you, and this is one of them. Can anyone shut down Michael? And it's Joe Dumars to the Heisman pose. Of course not. But Joe Dumars and the Pistons come the closest. And I will always love that Sports Illustrated picture, because at the end of the day, it is respect to your opponent. It, I don't care what game you're playing. I coach Little League. You play the sports. It's a sportsmanship thing. And you can look back and you say in hindsight, 2020, them not shaking their hands, even it's even more respect. Like, damn, you whooped their asses so bad, I don't even want to shake your hand.
Nah.
And, you know, no, I'm not looking at that. You go shake those guys' hands. And I think that deeply, Isaiah does regret it because it did keep him off the dream team.
I mean, in terms of Isaiah not being on the dream team, you got to look at it like this, right? So he had an issue with Michael Jordan. He had an issue with Scottie Pippen because they're the Chicago Bulls. He had issues with Larry Bird because of his statements in the playoff game. And he had issues with Karl Malone. Yeah. Remember Karl Malone put the blows on him.
Bird were almost was racial, if I'm not.
Issues with Bird were racial. So that's already one quarter of the team that you got problems with. So from a chemistry standpoint, you can't bring a guy like that in there and expect for things to work well when one quarter of the team has issues with him. Mm-hmm. So from a chemistry standpoint, I get it. Did he meet the criteria? Yes. Was it a political thing? Partly. But my thing with Isaiah Thomas is removing all of that, what I just said, and removing the fact that he wasn't on a dream team. When you look at this guy, 5'11", 175 pounds, if that, went up against giants night in, night out in the physical NBA, mm-hmm. right? Got two rings, led his team to two rings.
Let's call that the attitude era from now on.
Yeah, that's the attitude era of the NBA. Got two rings, would have had three if he didn't bust up his ankle. And for his first title, he beat Bird, Jordan, and Magic. There's almost no playoff run where there's a player that won against the top players in the league, unless you count Dirk Nowitzki's run for his first title, where he beat Harden, Westbrook, Durant, Bosh, Wade, LeBron.
I disagree. I think as much as being said about how the Pistons, we need to give Isaiah credit. We need to give Isaiah props to the Pistons props for beating the Pistons. I mean, for beating the Celtics and the yep. Lakers. But the biggest misnomer out there that I hate is the prime conversation. Michael didn't beat them in their prime. Well, that Lakers team was the best team in the West for 6 years, including the year before and that year that Mike and them beat them in the finals. Am I going to sit here and say, was that the best Magic we ever seen? No. But let's not act like Magic was a rundown
Dirk Nowitzki. That was like his 11th
year. Right? Yeah, let's not act like the Pistons, who got beat by that Bulls team, wasn't just winning championships and was the second best team in the East that year, okay, when Michael and them beat them. Okay, so this misnomer that Mike, I put it like this: they all did that between those four, meaning Magic, Bird.
Talking about in succession.
Okay, well, Bird wasn't there. Reggie.
Reggie was not a top three player in the league.
Okay. Okay. At that time, I don't think Bird was a top three player in the league. In my opinion, I remember looking back. It was Magic. It was Michael. It was Isaiah. It was I might have put Dominique Wilkins or Barkley at that point over Bird later 80s. Barkley. 80.
Dominique was a prolific scorer, but he never won anything.
Barkley
was a prolific scorer, but he never won anything. And they beat the Sixers in that playoffs too. So did he beat Barkley too?
Okay.
So yeah. So he beat everybody.
Did that just help you out being at your family?
Yes, you did. You gave me a free throw. But here's the thing. I don't believe in prime.
Okay.
Right? Either you're great
or you're not.
You're good, you're average, or you're below average. Mm-hmm. Right? So at this point, they were still good and they were still great. So you got to give them credit.
Mm-hmm. I give it to them. I give them the credit, and all the credit is due, and they earned it all. How about that as well? They finally get over that hump. And of course they have to go to the finals. Mike beats Detroit. They sweep the Pistons, him and Scottie and the boys, and they have to go play against Magic Johnson then. And I remember that so well. The whole, like, all of it, honestly. Every game, I remember the layup switch arm. I remember that game exactly because I happened to leave home. I was so mad that I had to leave. You know, back then, you're young. You got to do whatever grandma and them tell you got to do. And so I'm so mad that I'm like, grandma, the game's on. I don't care. Go pick up my pizza. So I had to go to, and so I saw the layup switch because that happened in the fourth quarter. And a tie-in Fiesta over there on 87 and Halsted. That wonderful, wonderful thin crust pizza that Chicago's not known for, but should be known for, by the way. So I remember that game exactly. I remember them beating them guys. I remember, and I hate this saying, Michael couldn't have stopped Magic full court. But Scottie put Scottie on him so Michael could score. It's a team thing. It's a team thing. And you couldn't, Michael could have did it. You know, but he'd have been tired on the other end. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But that Lakers team is what I'm trying to make my point is. Well, it's not a pushover Lakers team. They had won, 64, 65 games that year in
the
NBA?
That was a good team,
that's a
man.
Great, so I was always hear Laker fans say, when Mike beat Magic when he was old. No, Mike beat Magic, okay? Magic was he was still an all-star because he was still that good in the league. I don't want to hear that Michael had finally overcame it all.
And Magic had a lot left in the tank, bro. Like, I don't like when people try to frame the argument like that, you know, but we already, you know, itemized that. Like, there's no such, either you're great, you're good, you're average, or you're not. At that point in time, Magic was still great.
Right. Then that gave us this whole thing with the coach, Phil Jackson, great Zen master. The thing that I did not know, I didn't know he was bringing in that kind of stuff to practice. Well, these guys are having yoga and open, meditation sessions in practice.
Yeah.
And watching the film of the triangle, it is more intricate it is way more intricate than I thought it was watching it as it's a basketball see how much what you can do and how much you can do with the three pieces going around it. As can be. And even Michael talking about, I don't want to give Bill Cartwright the ball when his clock is going down. That's not, you know what I'm saying? And then giving Mike credit, you know, sometimes people say, well, Mike, people hate Jordan so much that they don't want to pay attention to how humbling things can be for someone who is as great as he is sought to be. And that's to be able to sit there and trust. You got two coaches that has told you, here's the ball, Michael, go shoot. Friday Night Light reference, all right? Love my favorite sports movie of all time, Boobie Miles, before he got hurt at the dinner table. Hell, coach, give that big boop the ball, just let him run, right? So that's what Mike was always told. That's what Buddy Ryan told Randall Cunningham. He had no offensive coordinator. Go make something happen. These guys were telling Mike to make it happen. So that's all Mike knew. Phil Jackson came in. He trusted enough in Phil to listen to Phil philosophies, the meditatings, the offense itself working.
And Tex Winter as well.
No,
you know what
part,
I mean?
He's always forgotten in that mix. I'm so glad you brought his name up more than once already, champ. Go ahead, talk on him because he was very influential as well.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at this. Going to that second team, I know we saw the first three, but, you know, I'm astounded that when you look at the triangle and you put someone like Tony Kukoc in that system where he can get it at the high elbow, like that just added a player like him added a new dimension to the triangle for them. And, you know, the foundation that was established by those first three teams,
right?
Going back to your 91 memory, I remember soon as I walked in the house.
Yeah.
I turned the TV on, and the first thing I saw was the going up with the right, then switching to the left.
Right.
Right. And then I remember watching I watched the entire series, but for whatever reason, I got in late and I saw that play. And in the beginning, I wasn't impressed by it until they showed it on the replay. And I was like, damn, yo, that's crazy. That's because he thought Sam Perkins, who was another good player, really good player, he thought Sam Perkins was going to block the shot, block the dunk.
Okay. Because I remember watching that too, always saying he didn't need to do that. You know what I mean? But I did see that where he said later that he thought that Sam was going to block the shot. Shout out to the chat room. CEO Emmy Richmond says apparently security reasons were the reasons why the Celtics didn't shake hands also.
No, they're saying it's security reasons. It wasn't security.
But they also
reasons.
Were on. And another thing, and I'm glad this came up because I think whoever Shaw was watching yesterday. And I didn't know this until it brought up, so I'm not going to act like I didn't know this. But it spoke about how, you know, at the Palace back then, you had to go one locker room, one way, one in, way out. Apparently, the Celtics did it. It didn't get caught on camera because they were already on the bench because they were taken out of the game. And then they crept off to the side and no one saw them leave. So, Take that as well. Maybe that's why the Celtics didn't get bombarded with it, but plus they're also the Celtics, and that's Boston. So they can do what they want to do. But back to Phil and answer that question is that, text winners, Phil Jackson implementing that triangle offense for him, champ. And it changed the NBA because you look at what it did for the Bulls to when Phil was out, 2 years after that, he got back in with the Lakers, and then they just let it. They were off the running as well. Right? And look what it did. It even worked better. Imagine if Phil would have had a Shaq with Michael. You know what I'm saying?
Because I don't even want to imagine that. That's game over.
It's just, to me, Mike was so great to sit there and everybody, how did he pass the ball? He had to tell him, I love Shannon Sharpe. Yo, Uncle Shay, I love you, man. But when it comes to your hatred of Michael Jordan, I want to know, what did he ever do to you? Because the things that be coming out of your mouth makes no sense at all, Shay.
What's crazy about Mike, right, is not only does he have the athletic ability, he makes everyone look like they're in slow motion. He can shift gears. That's when he elevates. Story. He keeps going up, you know, and just the dedication, you know, the focus and the drive to be number one, and then asking that of your teammates.
Absolutely.
You know, he didn't ask them for anything that he wasn't willing to do. And hold on, I'm gonna bring it back to the Dennis Rodman thing. Like, when they got Rodman that morning, they was like, all right, let's take it slow so Dennis could catch up to us. Meanwhile, Dennis done lapped him 4 times because he was ready to go. Like, he's one of those guys that's hardwired like Mike, that can stay up all night, that only need a little bit of rest. And some people are just wired in that way, you know? And for those that are wired in that way, it can be to their betterment, or it can be to their detriment. And when we start talking about certain elements of Michael Jordan's character that are detrimental to him, I think that's when we start talking about the gambling situation, the Atlantic City situation.
That stuff's going to come up. I have a little concern if it will come up, because they're going the way the documentary has been going. We talked about this last week. They bring you current, then they take you back so you can know about that person for this current is what they're doing. Yep. So some point they're going to go through all their championships, okay? Because that's what they've been doing. So I wonder and they're going to talk about that pause he took off. Now that rumor has it, and I don't want to, and again, and please guys, the thoughts and opinions.
This is speculation.
Are certainly of those guys in the program does not represent everything at Fox Sports Radio. This is clearly speculation I'm saying here, okay?
Allegedly
that the gambling situation is how his father was murdered, not killed. You know what I mean? By an accidental driver. It was set up that way. So I don't think they'll go into that, but I wonder, will Michael allow them to go in deeper and do tap into the gambling stuff that he was very into, you know, heavily into it. And they got a glimpse of that, playing golf, playing for money, taking a couple of money from these guys. They constantly talk about money. They're gambling out here, guys. I don't know if you guys peeped that several times. Card games. Yeah. You know, all kind of things going on. So we'll see if we get into that as well. But, champ, looking forward into the next 2 episodes, Horace Grant's going to get brought up. I think they're going to talk about Tony Kukoc. They're going to go into the Dream Team. So we're going to hear more about, you know, the Dream Team scenario. I'm excited. Like I said, sitting here watching these things right now, without giving a grade, you said you would give your grade once we're all done. It's still a it's still an A for me. Like I said, my mind was made up about this documentary the second I saw the promo 2 years ago, that this is going to be the greatest thing ever, okay? If Charlotte Flair, in my mind, could be the greatest female wrestler of all time, then Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time. I didn't say the best. I didn't say the most dominant this or this. The greatest. There's a lot of things that go into that scenario. Look at my video I did yesterday, guys, for Around the Block to Mike Knox. I asked you a question. Is Triple H, the King of Kings, the greatest wrestler of all time based off criteria? I think it's an important thing to put up there.
Let me break it down to you like this in terms of greatness. A lot of people say, he's great because he's clutch. It's more than clutch. Here's how you break this argument down, right? So you have game-winning shots, right? You have the nail in the coffin shots, where if you're up, the team's coming back, you hit a shot, nail in the coffin, right? And then you have clutch plays. And a clutch play can be a score, a rebound. LeBron had it with the block on Iguodala. Mike did it when he ripped Karl Malone, then came down, and then hit the game winner in Byron Russell's face. Mike checks off all those three boxes repeatedly throughout his career. There has never been a player in my mind that had done it from a stretch of the length that Mike did, that had game-winning plays, that put nails in the coffin, that hit game-winning shots, go-ahead shots. And also, his ability to have his will take over a game and permeate the floor with his dominance to the point where players are shook. I got a text the other day from somebody that was talking about this, that Muggsy Bogues told him a story that when they were playing in the playoffs, Mike was cussing Muggsy Bogues out, daring him to shoot. Muggsy kept missing. After that, Muggsy said to a specified source that my game was never the same after that. Mike got in my head and he messed me up. And Mike did that to a lot of players. He did it to his own teammates.
Kwame Brown.
Mike did it to players that weren't even on the teams that he was on. He did it to them when he met them in public places. In practices and everything. That to have that ability, that's an aura that's close to what Mike Tyson had before he met Buster Douglas, where your mere presence throws everyone off of their game or throws your opponent off their game. That's crazy.
Mike Tyson to Leon Spinks to this day never touched that man. That man was
Michael
scared.
Spinks.
He
never touched Bruce Seldon.
No.
He didn't
that 91-second fight in Atlantic City on closed-circuit TV that everybody went crazy over. They even showed it on ESPN 2 weeks ago. That man never touched that man.
Did you hear what happened in the locker room before?
No, I did not hear.
You want a quick story?
I get that story off air.
No. This is good for your fans. This is good for your fans.
Go ahead.
All right, so check this out. So Mike Tyson versus Michael Spinks, right? Now, Mike Tyson had the aura. He had the ability to get in the heads of his opponents before the fights. So what Michael Spinks' trainer decided to do was try to mess with Mike. And he kept saying, nope, I don't like his hand wraps. Wrap him again. He kept complaining to the commissioner. I don't like his hand wraps. Wrap him again. Nope, that's not good enough. Wrap him again. So after like four or five times, Tyson got pissed off. He punched through a hole in the wall. He punched a hole in the wall to the other side where Spinks was and yelled, are these wraps effing good for you right now, mother effer? From that point on, Michael Spinks was gone. He packed his bags before the fight was started.
He was done.
Before the fight even started.
He was done. Listen, guys, we're going to get up out of here. We're going to come back next week, give you our opinions about The Last Dance. We got episodes
five and six
coming up. Champ, you can follow Champ Creed at Champ Creed. See it right there, need for his name.
Champ. At Champ Creed on everything, baby.
On everything. Mike Knox on everything. Listen, guys, thank you for tuning in. This is available on YouTube, on Facebook.com, available on Blog Talk Radio, on iPods. I still got an iPod, by the way. You name it, it's there. Just Google this guy. Listen, we're going to get up out of here, guys. Thank you for joining us again this week. We'll see you next week. And with that being said, guys, we are out of here.
Fingers. Available on Zoom.